Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
Issue 10.5.
Woo! Yeah!
All right, we're going to jump into the reviews, what we all love to do, so let's do it. Start with some, I see some Mr. Miracle on the table.
Yeah, so I guess Mr. Miracle is a big one. I personally, so I read 1 and 2 back to back. I was kind of disappointed in certain aspects of the direction this went from issue 1. Issue 1 was so good. It was, but it's like when your favorite band puts out a new album and you're like, I don't know about this one. Is it going to be as good? And then like a month later, you're like, this is the most amazing thing ever. So there's just a lot of stuff I picked up, especially like from a writing perspective on this. Tom King killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely killing it. Like the way he created a poetic refrain from issue number 1 through issue number 2 and even picked up more in issue number 2. Refrain being just like a repeated like sentence or a few words or something like
that.
It's
so
his
haunting
whole,
too. That's
the
like
dark side is
mm-hmm.
coming up over and over and over again is beautiful, and the way he does it is just absolutely beautiful. And then again, in the first couple of pages of this, we have Mr. Miracle going to war, killing all these people, and it sort of makes like his war orders into another refrain. He keeps getting called to all these
mm-hmm.
different places.
What
and
is it?
He's
for
yeah,
I can't even think
for
of
New Genesis,
yeah,
and
for
he
New Genesis.
Keeps saying, you know. He gets called there, and yes, Orion, for New Genesis, different place, for, yes, Orion, for New Genesis, new place, yes, Orion, for New Genesis.
Mm.
Just, like, 4 or 5 times in a row. And just beautiful. Then he's, like, trying to take a shower, but the blood won't wash off. And just great stuff. And also, like, this is a very small thing. But one of the reasons I think this is so interestingly written is that Tom King has chosen not to include a to-be-continued, to-be-concluded, continued next issue,
mm-hmm.
what have you, at the end of either of these comics so far. It's just the last panel, and then that's it. It's done. We'll see
just gonna
what
add
happens
to
yeah.
the flavor of the book.
Yeah, and it's such a surreal read as it is. Like you really are kind of confused as to what's going on, and it just adds to that.
Well, that's the thing is like everything is from his viewpoint, and the thing like it's from his viewpoint, but not his viewpoint. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you don't understand if what you're seeing, what he's seeing, is real because that's how you're seeing everything.
Mm.
So it's like I don't know.
surreal is a really great way of describing it. It's very much. I have this feeling that we're dealing with the area of... So the first issue indicates that the great trick was that he was killing himself and he was going to be able to survive suicide. And I'm wondering if we're seeing inside of a suicide trip. Like, this is actually what's happening in the moments between death and revival. Like, we're inside of his psyche in a way. I also didn't realize that the entirety of the second issue occurs in 9-panel grids.
Yeah.
Every single page is 9-panel grid, 9-panel grid. Once again, the whole monotony or the...
Mm.
It's
oh my God,
creates an
right.
uneasy
mm-hmm.
sense. And
if I'm not mistaken, the first one
might be the same
too.
Way.
I'd need to go back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not entirely in 9-panel grids, it's mostly in 9-panel
right.
grids.
Okay.
Well, right
and there's a weird, like, there's some subversive things. Like, they talk about how much they dislike Granny Goodness, and it's like, in her presence, they both turn into sniveling children.
Yeah,
like,
they both revert
like,
back to their old, like ways, and
both
they're kind of like...
Both Big Barda and Mr. Merrick.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm.
the greatest couple. It's just so weird and surreal, and it's beautiful, but it's haunting, and...
It's super haunting. Like, it's so good, but, like, when I'm reading it, I'm creeped out, but I'm like, I can't stop.
Mm,
this
that's
is,
the good stuff.
This is another thing that I think requires multiple readings, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's
oh, totally.
So much in this. And what is up with Orion being High Father and
that...
not a good High Father in
no.
a sense, either? It's... There's
yeah. a, he just seems like a giant bastard.
He does, and he's kind of a dick anyway. All like, panels.
So far both issues have all been so
just except night. There was a couple full page spreads.
The first two pages were full spread, like full spreads, and then everything else after that it looks like night panels.
Well, I want to talk about the opening of issue two as well, because there's a. It's a six-panel horror scene where a one of the parademons is eating someone, and it ends with his head being exploded by some sort of a ray gun. It is the level of violence, but it's violence portrayed in such a way that it's pointless and it's uncaring.
Well, the thing is like, looking at all of this, like, just the first part of it, it's like he's just going through the motions of things.
Yeah. And that leads me to believe that we're not actually seeing him, because it's so emotionless that it's like, it's that moment in between existence. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's action, there's betrayal, it's like a freaking soap opera at this point. I'm like, I need more!
But I can totally see him, like, as from what issue one set up, Scott Free is deeply into depression. Like he has, like he has all the signs of it so far, and like to then be like thrust from basically like recovering from a suicide attempt into a war for the fate of the entire universe.
The thing that bothers me about that is it's not even really touched on. Like everybody thinks he's like it's like everyone sees that he's fine, and that's the part I don't understand, because like. If I thought about my significant other, and this is, like, from the standpoint of his wife, had just attempted to kill himself, and it's all fine, like, and he's now going to war, what?
So I think these, and
I think it's an interesting play, actually, on the superhero trope in general, when, like, these crazy things happen to these superheroes, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, sorry, you tried to kill yourself. Well, too bad, we gotta go fight an intergalactic war. Mm. Or, like, you have all this PTSD and depression and, like, whatever mental illness you have. Too bad, like, once you're physically recovered, then you're good enough to go fight these, you know, giant battles for the fate of the universe. And that's a deep trope in both, in, like, all of the superhero genres together.
And I think it's a hallucination in the fence, and his depression is leading for these events. So you have him having to deal with a war he doesn't want to fight, his wife being distant to him, and then having to deal directly with his childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And so it's all of the things he doesn't want to deal with that he's seeing in his visions of this. And he's even dealing with the fact that he is the son of High Father, yet he's staring at Darkseid's son, who is in the position that he should have.
Mm. I mean, overall, I have not read or touched Mr. Miracle yet, but I certainly am going to pick it up. And primarily, I mean, Tom King is enough to sell you. It should be enough to sell you, because the Visions was fantastic. I cried when I knew Tom King was going to DC. I cried for, like, days, because he nailed the Visions so well. So I'm not surprised. So what that means to me is I'm hearing all of you talk. None of this is surprising me. This is like, oh, Tom King? Okay, yeah, that sounds right.
You're like, this is all great. This is, it's just, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm sitting here, and I'm like, God, I could probably read this to my eyelids and still find new stuff. It's
I
would recommend the Visions as well, then. Mm-hmm. He nailed it. All right, more reviews. I guess I'll go, since have. I'm going to go with Runaways number one, and this is a Marvel, and if you haven't read, there's an original Runaways, and now this is like a reboot of it. The writer is Rainbow Rowell, which is pretty awesome that your name is Rainbow, and the artist is Chris Anka. So this is really about Nico Minoru. I don't know how you say her last name properly.
Minoru?
Okay.
I'm kind of
Thank goodness. So, Nico is an amazing character who I had never met before until she was in the all-female Avengers group.
The A-Force?
A-Force
which
group.
Which was amazing.
Amazing
run. At least the first arc. After G. Willis stopped writing it, it was kind of fell sad. Off, but...
Yeah, and I really love that Nico references A-Force in this book as well. That made me happy. It referenced her original team. That made me I don't know her original team. And then all of a sudden, bam, Gertrude shows up. And Gertrude apparently is a big deal because she was killed in the first arc of the original Runaways. there's some time traveling that happens. I'm not happy about. But ultimately,
let me pick the microphone up and make your table flip.
Yeah. And ultimately, what the rest of the issue is going to be about is Nico trying to save Gertrude using every spell she has. However, she's used so many spells already, she can't keep using spells. So if she says a word to do her spell and she's already used it before, it fizzles or something crazy happens, like it starts raining indoors. So she's trying her best to save Gertrude. And I'm not going to tell you what happens at the end, but I really love the way that she, like, is in tears trying to save her best friend and trying to use any spell that she can think of to try and fix this situation. And it does what it, not knowing what the first arc was all about, they did do the time travel just good enough that I'm not too upset, where basically she's like, well, if I relive the event, this happened, so how is it possible that you're here now? Because you should be dead. And basically what this her time traveling boyfriend says is, yeah, that all did happen, and the reason that it happened in that way is because I was there and I had taken her away to now. So it's, I'm like, all right, okay, I'll let this slide. Nothing like changed, like no one's memories changed. Right. It all happened the way it was supposed to happen with him going back in time to get her. So
just overall, made me hate time travel a little bit with that explanation. Like, I felt the hatred for a second.
I love time travel, so I'm so in the minority on this one.
Yeah. But anyways, I really liked Nico's use of her spells, because again, she's already used so many of her spells. She has to get super creative in how mm-hmm. she says certain words. I thought it was really cool.
So I read this as well. Did you think it was an easy pickup? Like, it was enough to keep you driving through the story?
It was only because of Nico. I don't know. If I didn't read A-Force, I probably would not even think about picking this up. Gotcha. If it wasn't for A-Force, Runaways would not even be in my sphere of things I would want to look at.
See, the only concern I had with the issue was it felt like there wasn't enough that happened for me. It was a great intro, but I wanted something to pull me and grab me.
Yeah.
I want to read more of the story, though, at least.
I think the what's supposed to happen for people who read the first arc is the return of Gertrude.
Okay.
Which apparently she's a popular character.
Right.
Which I don't know, because I didn't read the first arc. But for me, it was all about Nico, and she was good enough. So I think A-Force set up Runaways, number one.
Okay.
That's the way I see it.
Interesting.
Yep. That's my review. Done.
Nice. What do you got for us, Nat?
I have The Realm, number one, from Image Comics. This is written by Seth Peck with art by Jeremy Howen, who is the artist on The Beauty, which I'm not a fan of the art in The Beauty, and I picked this up begrudgingly because I wanted to be on top of what was new and what was coming out, and I absolutely loved this issue. This is a post-apocalyptic story, which I generally can't get enough of. The big twist on this one is that it's post-invasion of fantasy beings, so orcs and dragons and elves and
All right, I can live with that. I thought you were going to say aliens, and I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like sort of race relations stuff where you see that it's a humans only town, and you know people are doing jobs for toothbrushes because that's, you know, a nice luxury. But yeah, you're kind of just thrown right in the middle, and it seems like your main character is a merc who kind of just does jobs to survive, and he does the right thing, and he's dealing with a king character who's basically dealing in human trafficking, and he didn't seem to enjoy that idea. So yeah, he let some revenge happen from one of the girls who was being trafficked. So yeah, this is a really great debut, just all world building more than anything else. I want to give a major shout out to the artist Jeremy Hahn, because he can draw a bow. A bow that actually flexes when the string is pulled back and actually has power to it and weight. And it's awesome to see something drawn accurately.
Nice.
Yeah. There's definitely darker elements to this. There's going to be magic in, like, dark wizardry form, it seems, and demon entities possessing people. This was a really, really cool first issue, and I can't wait to see where it goes. But yeah, definitely. The Realm is a mature readers, for sure, but this is an easy pickup.
Nice. Did you put it in your banner? Are you going to keep reading it?
I am going to keep reading it. I'm actually going to pull this book.
So we'll look to you to help us keep us informed.
Yeah,
for sure. How's it going?
Nice. Nice. So I'm going to try to do a variation on Leander's Hate It, Love It. I'm going to call this Great and Meh. And I'm going to try to get through four issues in about 2 minutes.
One of them I have.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'll put that towards the end then if you want to say anything about it. But, okay, so first we got Venomverse by Colin Bunn and Ebon Coelho. Sorry if I mispronounce your name. Meh. Totally meh. There was 5 issues of Edge of Venomverse leading up to this. Super meh.
Mm.
Just, like, was not interested in the story.
So
it was
disappointing,
like,
right now. I haven't read it
symbiotes,
yet.
Symbiotes, like, who'd taken over the previous people from alternate timelines and then getting taken over by other symbiotes. Don't really care. It's okay. Not... It's
depression.
Trying to be... Yeah, it's trying to be cool, not
fair.
Cool. Number two, I got the Adventure Time regular show crossover, with written by Connor McCreary and illustrated by Mattia DeMeo. Awesome. Great. I'm loving it so far. They have to go on a quest to find the power, which is the old keyboard, and they have to defeat the 4 elementals of cool, which are video gaming, freestyling, karting, and... I forget the... It's basically all the things you need to be cool.
Uh-huh.
There's a great sequence of dancing in here where they have to dance to the fastest music possible, and Rigby hambones his way out of it. So fans of the show definitely get a kick out of it.
Nice.
And it's also just a really great read in general. Next, I got Motor Crush number 6, which is written by Brandon Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Babs Tara. Oh, wait. No, that's the story. Sorry. Script by Brandon Fletcher and Cameron Stewart. Art by Cameron Stewart as well. Wow, doing a lot for this. Cameron
Stewart.
No, really?
Babs Tara's in interiors, I think. Line art, Cameron Stewart.
And,
what?
Yeah. So, right, even though this is a number 6, it's a really great issue to get in. I've not read any of it before. I just picked it up because I've always been interested. Really cool. Motorcycles, gangs, people getting kneecapped, not kneecapped. You know, really cool, like, fast motorcycles, all that stuff. Interesting read. Definitely pick it up. Next, I got Scooby Apocalypse number 17, which is written by Keith Griffin and J.M. DeMatteis. Sorry about that, J.M., artist Dale Eaglesham. Artist, also sorry to you, Dale. I've been reading Scooby Apocalypse since number 1, dropping it. Story's getting really into a rut.
Wow.
And I think the worst thing that happened to this, I think the worst thing that happened to this comic was it was extended past 12 issues. And now they're trying to extend it even further. The plot is totally stagnant. They're trying to give us too much forced character development that's not necessary. And it's totally at the stake. This entire issue, they just spend basically sitting in a tree reminiscing about their lives, which could have been totally a great issue, except that it wasn't. It gave us characterization we already had. Nothing about the actual plot was developed, which I thought was the coolest part of the first couple issues. So, dropping it from my pull list.
The tension in this room is palpable.
We're about to have at it, Patrick.
I am the one person who doesn't read this book, and I am real concerned right now about where I'm positioned myself. I'm going to roll back right now and let things just happen.
Yeah. I am going to say I will do a full review of Motor Crush in a little bit, so we can do Scooby Apocalypse for just a second, because I feel like we can't just let that go. I mean,
Cat's not going to let it go.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay, speaking as a person who's watched Scooby-Doo since they were, let's see, I am 24 now,
keep
probably
that in mind.
Since about 2.
Keep that in mind, that was the first VHS I owned, was Scooby-Doo.
But this
season
was between me and my mom. Like, me and my mom was like, Cat, or not Cat, she called me Katie, things get confusing. Katie, we're gonna go watch Scooby-Doo, and we go sit and watch Scooby-Doo. So the sheer amount of stuff that I can see in this, and all the role reversal, and all of the little things that get thrown in there is the most amazing part to all of it. It's just those things I can pick out because this is like Cat's bread and butter right here. It's the first cartoon I ever watched as a kid and still consistently watch.
Also same here.
But the thing is my biggest thing was when I was a kid, I hated Daphne. I hated her. Mm-hmm. I hated her so much. And now seeing her as the leader and seeing it the fact that, yes, of course, yes, some of the character stuff was forced, but seeing the little, like, yes, we had the bits and pieces of it. I personally like learning more about a character, even if it's forced sometimes. Like, if it's too forced, then we might have a problem. But this one, just, like, looking at the fact that she's like, I had this great job. My dad was so proud of me. Like, I can relate to some things like that, because it's like she's having so much pushed on her, and she's just like sitting in the street. She's like, the world freaking ended. Look where my fucking life is, and I don't even understand what's happening anymore.
See, I totally agree with you on that. In the aspect of Daphne is now my favorite character in Scooby Apocalypse, mm-hmm. for sure, where she's gone from bimbo to leader. However, I thought her whole backstory here, they've Colin Bunn's done a great job characterizing her without having these flashbacks at all, and the fact that they go into like 2 or 3 or 4 pages of just like an unnecessarily repetitive backstory about her, of that, like, they could have done it. I'm disappointed in the fact that they've shown me they can do better and they didn't.
Yeah, I will say, to be kind of maybe in the middle, I'll try and placate both of you. I'll placate both of you for just a second here. One, I do agree with Patrick that it's stagnant. They should have moved on to the next whatever. That's the best part of Scooby Apocalypse, is that they were on the run. Like, that was almost one of the best parts of it, mm-hmm. that they were on the run. Mm-hmm. And so they could have still done Daphne's background and have them still on the run. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to stop and stay in that one spot. Now, yes, it does add to the depth of, like, the world has gone to crap and I need to sit here and think about it for a second. And sitting in the tree is a good time to do that. If you're going to do it, that's the time to do it.
I mean, the way it falls out of the tree is just, like, totally shaggy. So I was just like, well, all right, I can see that.
The way that Daphne broke the monster's neck was perfect. Yeah. And she wouldn't have done that if she wasn't in the tree. So, I mean, I will give credit where credit is due. With that being said, the other part that they probably extended and they probably did a bad job of, and they should have known, because every single person who's seen the cartoon could tell you, do not put Scrappy in anything that has to do with Scooby-Doo. Just don't even do it.
I was pretty okay with him being dead. I'm not
going
to lie to you.
Me too. I thought he was going to be dead and I was going to be happy about it. Also, the tree incident allowed Velma to come out of her shell and be like, try to be a hero. And
that was a great scene. After Daphne jumps down and snaps the monster's neck, and then Velma tries to do basically the same thing and just face plants. Yeah. That is actually like
that made it really that kind of made it worth it.
I was just I remember that. She's like, I got the
But I'll say, like, the reason I'm not into it now, and I'll still pick it up and flip through it just to see if it gets back to its old self, is because it has been so good, and reading the entire thing basically just been that one, like, those two panels. There's three panels of all three of them jumping out of the tree. I don't think is worth the entire comic.
Yeah,
I mean, and they've done so much better.
I even enjoyed the flashback of Daphne. I like seeing her still, like, I feel like she's become more of a bitch, and of course I'm enjoying all of that. Like, even before, when she was a bitch before, and it's only gotten worse, I'm like, I love it.
I will say that they could have cut that in half.
Oh, yeah.
And because they could have cut that in half and then move the story on, because I agree, but they kind of overplay it too much. Like, I love Daphne. She is my number one character in this book. But I don't need so much of why she is the way she is, right?
It's 5 pages.
Yeah.
Almost. There's two half pages of inner monologue and then 4 full pages of flashback. They could have easily cut that in half.
Yes, because what I didn't need in this book is Daphne barking down Freddy again. I'm like, I get it. You're the alpha. I get it. Mm-hmm. We established whatever.
Yeah.
Fred's a little
short of literally dominating Fred,
yes.
There's nothing more Daphne can do to put herself in charge.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
At the same time, like, just thinking back and forth between the cartoon, like, I can't say that I dislike that, because in the cartoon, that's all he ever did with her.
No,
she was always the damsel.
It's more oblivious.
It's great, but we didn't need the flashback to reestablish this, because we've already gotten this in the present.
Yeah.
She kicks ass and takes names, and meanwhile, Fred's stuck in the van with the bro, literally being lame.
Yeah.
With a broken foot. And, like, yeah. So we didn't need it. Just unnecessary. Yeah. Absolutely unnecessary. And because they focused on this unnecessary flashback, it stagnated the plot. Right, which, like Leander was saying, is probably one of the best parts of the book.
Right. So I say pick up, you know, 1 through 12, see if you're really invested. And if you are invested, continue on and see what happens.
The thing is, I don't know where they're going with this.
I don't know where it's going either.
Now you've got, the thing is, like, we're hitting the point where it's like, when are you going to unmask whoever this is?
Well, we know it's the brothers.
Yeah, well, they started it, but the thing is something's still going on. Yeah. And it's like, so, and like, you still haven't even found out why some people didn't change.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of the thing that's like, where, like, it can't keep rolling, so I'm hoping that it'll actually push towards how, like, all the actual reasons for some of the people who are still normal, and then why this caused for some people to change and stuff like that.
When it gets back into the story, I'll pick it up again.
Sure, but right now, I need a break.
I'm not full with it.
That's fair. All right, let's move on from this 2-minute review.
Well, that's why I put it last.
I told you we were going to have it.
All right, I think you're okay. Cat.
So I have Bombshells United, number one. I haven't read all of the Bombshell ones. I can honestly say right now, reading this first one, I'm going to probably collect it for the art, because I like the pinup art, and I love Wonder Woman in this. Like, her outfit, her, like, the art style of drawing, it's just, like, it's beautiful. I love it. I love the pinup style art. After reading it, I'm like, not super sure if I'm gonna read these.
Right, art's great, but writing not so much.
Yeah, I'm like, I want this for the art. I don't ever say that.
Who's the writer and artist on it?
Marguerite Bennett, and then the funny thing is Marguerite Savage. I can't, like, Savage. It's like S-A-U-V-A-G. It's weird. Like, I have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, even Patrick stopped. So, yay! Yeah, so, like, I haven't read all of Bombshells, so that might be one of the reasons why I didn't care for it very much. But if you're starting a new series, you're going to want to be able to get people into it.
Yeah.
By giving not, like, a whole, you know, 10-page backstory about what happened in Bombshells, but at least enough to where I understand what's happening. The only understanding I really got from this is, at the end of Bombshells, Wonder Woman has disappeared. No one knows where Wonder Woman is, and the weird thing is they call her the Wonder Woman, so that's, like, also kind of, like, alright.
I like that, actually.
The Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it's the Wonder Woman. Like, but, I mean, I like the art in the books, though. Cool. I mean, even, like, in comparison to the front cover art, like, the inside is still really
I'm just
going
to
really
point out that the first page you pulled to show us was actually an ad for Snickers.
Well, you saw that. It was mostly meant for that. I really hate those Snicker ads. They really need to stop. Yeah, I was like, so you guys are killing
DC,
me.
DC, when you listen to this, just stop
it. Like, Snickers, give us your revenue money.
Yeah, seriously. But, like, the art in it's great, and it's just after reading this, like, all I've really gotten is it's set relatively close after World War II. It's right now, it's Wonder Woman doesn't want the internment camps, and it sounds like somehow in Bombshells she saw a glimpse of the future or something, and she's trying to stop all this horrific things with the internment camps in America. There's definitely a lot of race relations, like, hiding but not hiding. Like, it's in your face about it, but not to the point where I'm irritated about it. Like, I'm kind of like, all right, you're right. Okay, yeah, get it. Kind of deals.
Right.
But, I mean, my biggest thing is, like, I know that I'm missing, like, a fundamental understanding, but at the same time, like, when you're doing a brand new series, you need to at least give me some sort of understanding without giving me a 15-page backstory. Like, give me the minimal details. I don't need every piece. Like, even the opening sequence is, like, it talks about the characters that were in it a little bit. Like, Hot Girl, the Batwoman. I think even Batwoman is the Batwoman and stuff like that. And it's just, like, you're probably going to be art in my box. Because I don't know if
I'll definitely get it for the art, though.
Yes, I love the art. Like, if you love pinup style, I remember when I first originally saw Bombshells and she was in that Rosie Riveter kind of pose on the front, and they had her like that. I'm like, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I actually started collecting all of the Bombshell issues because I love the art so much. Like, I haven't even opened some of them.
Nice.
And it's just, well, probably that's what Bombshells United is going to be, is I'm going to collect it for the art unless something insane happens and gets me sucked in. But I love the fact that it's all the female characters, and they're all in strong positions. and of course all the 50s style art and the way that people show up in it, because I think I saw a figure for Batman and it's like he has the Batman crest and like the little fedora and he's like the nostalgia 50s detective with the toothpick, like tough detective with the toothpick.
He's wearing a vest instead of like the body armor. The vest has pockets where the six pack would be.
Yeah. He's got his little trench coat. Like,
that's the kind
of stuff that I want to see, is I like seeing them drawn in that art style. Yeah. Like, no one, like, if I remember correctly in the first one, like, when I read the first couple of issues, there was no, I don't think you even really saw a man except for, what was it, Steve, Trevor, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't really recall any men whatsoever, which I kind of liked, because it's like, yes, all the female superheroes, and no love bullshit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, probably going to be an art thing. I'll read number two, see if anything gets better. I don't know if it will.
All right, I'll jump into Motor Crush. And just going to extend the review that Patrick already did, because I thought it's worthy of such an extended review. So ultimately what you have here is you have this female character named Sully. No, Domino. And her dad's name is Sully. Mm-hmm. And what's going on is that the dad is trying to protect his child because the child has some sort of medical condition and it's treated in some very unique way, is all I'm going to say.
I think she just has asthma.
Yeah, but the way that it's treated.
She has an inhaler. But yeah, the way
that it's treated. Yeah, so it has to be more than asthma because it's being treated.
If you have I have asthma, and if you have it to the point where it, like, it can be really debilitating
I think they're looking for a cure that's more than just an inhaler.
It's really reactive to stuff. Like, if you have, like, with chemicals, it'll... So I can see where, especially if it looks like that has to do with, like, motor stuff, even the smell of gasoline and the stuff can trigger it.
Yeah.
So I can see where, that it is, it can be a very debilitating thing because your lungs, like, they fill with fluid and it constricts, so I could totally.
And she totally goes into some kind of shock situation when she's on the ground. So, yeah, that was it right there. So, ultimately what you have, though, let me just say that issue number 6 is a fantastic issue because I don't even want to read 1 through 5. I don't need to. 6 set up everything I need to set up.
I feel like this could be a number one.
This should be a number one. This should be a number one issue. I need everything. Everything I need about this comic is right here in number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea. What I really liked about it too is that they introduced two other characters, Yaya and her dad. And I thought, because I didn't know, like, this is number 6. Am I missing something? Is there a backstory? And the way they introduced those two characters was they did it very well. Ultimately, the dad is indebted to someone, and he has to pay off the debt. And Sully has to do some really horrible things, potentially, to pay off this debt. So, something happens. I'm not going to tell you what happens. And then it jumps to the future. So now, we're done with this little part, and it jumps to the future. It was almost like this was a flashback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the future, now, you have... you have Domino and you have Yaya, who seems to be like the top two motorcyclists, like, period. Like, and they're racing each other, they're trying to, like, race against each other. And it's really a female motorcycle comic book
with some really
deep background that's going to catch up to them.
Like, yeah.
You can already tell that what happened in the past is going to catch up in a really bad way, and likely someone's going to die.
So, I have been... I stopped reading Motor Crush on probably, I think, like, issue 4.
Just so you've been reading the first couple.
I didn't realize this is a flashback issue.
I didn't know it was.
Motor Crush, the first story arc, is dealing with Domino and the next race, essentially, and dealing with Crush, the pink drug in the story, and how that sort of drives the industry, and Domino dealing with being a star and having a video drone always around her.
Oh, I didn't know she was that popular. I didn't know she was a star.
So that makes sense as to why Babs Tarr wasn't drawing this issue, is the fact that it's a flashback, so you put a different artist on that piece, who's also one of the...
So then what do you think about my review, knowing that you've read 1 through 4?
I kind of want to go back and read 5, like, finish off the story and pick this one up now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the creative team and the ideas behind it. It's just...
The look on your face while he's talking about this,
because I was like... I didn't realize the whole issue was Domino was the kid, the little kid in the story. So I'm like, Domino's the lead on the cover, you know, that this is her book.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic book. I want it. I want every single issue of this. Well, not number 1 through 5, like 6. I want 6 on.
After what Nat said, he's like 6 and on.
Yeah,
I don't know. The first story, it's
I'm sure awesome. It's great, but I am this Domino. Like, this is...
Well, the thing is, Domino is not only, like, one of the most popular racers, she also street races behind the scenes.
Which it kind of alludes to why she would be doing that, because she sees some street racers, and she's like, I love those girls. As a little girl, she sees adult street racers, and she loves them. Anyways, that's it. I'm done. Motor Crush, pick it up. Number 6. Don't have to do 1 through 5. Number 6 is fine. 1 through 5 could be good, though.
All right, well, I'm going to jump into Mech Cadet U number 2. This is written by Greg Pak with art by Takashi Miyazawa. This series is exactly what I want in something new. It's fun. It's easy. There's a lot of background story in it with a world that we don't know a ton about. The lead character, Sanford U, is completely and utterly endearing. He loves his mom, and he shows love to his past, and he's kind of the outcast in this group of kids who's learning what the mechs are, and there's a real threat and real dread at the end of this story of what's incoming. I know we're running a little long, so I'm just going to cut this short. You should really be reading Mech Cadet U. It's one of the great releases of this year.
Nice.
Sounds good.
I got one. Oh, well, you got Gwenpool, and then I promised
myself I wasn't going to do Gwenpool, except there's just a part in the middle of this comic that makes it so amazing. So basically, to set it up, evil Gwen comes back from the future when she's a supervillain, and to save her past self.
Mm-hmm.
And by future, it's not time travel, it's between comic travel, so, you know,
it's a little better.
She kills Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and then Gwen from our time is like, no, why'd you do this? You can't do this. And evil Gwen from the future is like, it doesn't matter. He's Spider-Man. I can't kill him. Like, they're in the comic world, and there's this giant tornado that's literally retconning the whole thing that says Gwenpool can't kill Spider-Man. And she's like, you'll learn. It doesn't matter. The editors or writers or a fan vote or whatever, they trump us. We're the most powerful character ever, but it doesn't even matter. And she's like, we learned this. And there was the big summer event. There was like 10 issues, 9 tie-ins, and none of it mattered. It's all stupid. She's basically calling out the entire Marvel comics division and saying they're too afraid for change and to make anything real happen. I just love this so much. She's literally like, it's getting more meta than meta. I was like, how did they allow this to pass when she's basically like calling them all like pussies for like not allowing this stuff to happen in a comic made by Marvel? Yeah. Gwenpool, best comic on the shelf, best ongoing superhero comic on the shelf right now. Saying it right now, pick it up. Everybody should be reading it.
I want to know how that writer's getting away with it.
I know. Well,
like,
played.
Talk about,
well
played. Talk about shit talking.
Yeah.
Seriously. For the announcement of the new writer on Gwenpool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really interesting because she's like talking to her past self. She's like, everybody wants you to be a villain. You can't be the hero. Like, when you first came in, your powers were basically knowing everybody's secret identity. That's a villain power. She's like, that's a villain power. That's not a superhero power. Just be a villain, man.
That's awesome.
Just like fall into your roles. And she's like, no, I want to be more. Yeah, it's basically like evil Gwen trying to convince good Gwen that Marvel sucks. And good Gwen is like, no, I still believe in Marvel.
That's awesome.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, Kat, what you got over there?
Got Dastardly and Muttley, which... Wacky Races is the best way I can put it.
Yes, yes.
The dude with the mustache and the dog that's like... I don't actually know a whole lot about them. I just know them from the Wacky Races because I loved watching Wacky Races. But so you've got Garth Ennis as your writer, and I have Marcet, I believe, is the artist. That's all. He's got one name. Apparently, that person has one name. That's all they've got.
Cool.
Apparently, he's cool.
Yeah, he's cool.
Personally, I wish I could remember the cartoon more, so I'm having a feeling if you remember the cartoon and you've watched the cartoon more, it's kind of like Scooby-Doo, where I catch so much more. With this one, I was like, a lot of it was over my head. The one thing I caught was that laugh does come into play with the dog, but he's not a dog at the beginning.
Did you perchance read Wacky Raceland?
I don't think I read that, actually.
Oh my god. I was so sad when they ended this on... And it's basically Wacky Raceland as Mad Max.
That's great. Right.
I know. They ended it after, like, issue 5 or 6. I was like... Oh man, it was so good. I thought it was the best thing ever. And Dastardly and Motley, of course, are in that.
Mm-hmm. So, they're like fighter pilots, and they come and they're trying, they go... The first opening to this is like the most cartoony thing I have read in a long, long time. Which you kind of come into this realm where it looks like they're kind of like in the Middle East area, and they're talking about this power source called what the heck would they call it? It's like even some stupid name, Unstabilium 239.
Nice.
Isn't that supposed to be, well, rather unstable? And of course, the guy's like Piffle, which I don't really know what that is. Your words are but night soil next to the glory of our fabulous achievement. I will hear no more of this, Professor. And he's, like, talking about it, and he's like, okay, can you switch it on? And then you see a huge explosion, and then you said, no, not that one. Like, the, nice. And it's, nice. Like, a plastic. Literal nuclear explosion, right. And you see, like, a bird in the corner being fried. Like, no, not that one, you. It's, no, not that one, you. And he gets cut off because there's an explosion. Of course, like, any other...
You pushed the wrong button.
Any other cartoon. So you kind of come into contact with Dastardly and Muttley, and you find out that the dude's name is actually not Dastardly. These are their air pilot nicknames. Muttley is his co-pilot and everything. He brings his dog with him. Like, this is like cartoony bullcrap at its fullest, and I'm just like, yes! Like, this is what, like, some of the Looney Tunes ones should have been, but weren't, so I'm assuming that's why they're doing this one. And so... They're trying to find this drone, and they find this drone, and it's leaking this weird stuff, and it's, like, rainbowy and cartoony, and you're like, what is going on? Oh,
that's awesome.
That's crazy.
And you're just like, what the hell? And then, of course, like, you get to the part where, like, even his stuff starts to change. Like, this has reminded me of, like, Roger Rabbit, in a fighter plane at this point. Like, his thing turns into a wheel with one of the loud bike horns. Like, it's like, what is going on?
That's awesome.
At the end, you finally get Muttley in a very funny way, because I'm pretty sure I know what happens, because he brings his dog with him in the plane, and, at this point, they're trying to figure out what's going on. Like, the drone, you have people who come in asking Dastardly about the drone and everything, and he doesn't have any explanations. And it says that it flew over them at one point, and then you start getting one of the detectives to... act like, I feel like he started acting like Daffy Duck in part of this, and you even got a
duck season, rabbit season.
Not even that, it's like, he's like, what the hell's gotten into, we'll be right back, and then after these messages, and it's like, what is happening in this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm awesome. Honestly kind of excited to read more of it, because I'm pretty sure this world is going to turn into a cartoony bullcrap world, and I'm like, also for this.
Nice.
So I would say read it. I'm excited for issue 2. I hope it continues on with some of this, like, hilarity. So,
all right, and I'm just gonna do a quick one, really. Iceman number 5. I'm only bringing it up because it's actually got good. and so what you have is basically Juggernaut trying to find the X-Mansion because he thinks the X-Men Blue are there, because X-Men Blue beat his butt up and threw him off a million miles away. And he's obviously, X-Men Blue are not there. Iceman's there. Iceman had just told his parents that he was gay. And really, like, in the very beginning, what kind of sets the tone is the mother. And the mother part where Kitty's like, hey, calm down, it's going to be okay. And she says, the mother says, wait, Kitty knows? Does everyone at this circus know? I'm like, mama, don't do it to me, mama. Don't do it.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, that sets the tone for the entire thing.
Wow.
So on top of that tone that's throughout the entire issue, they also decide... And why it's a good issue, they show you that Iceman will be, and is already, in a mega level mutant. Like, he can now fly with wings.
What?
That's all I'm going to tell you.
Oh, I need to
enjoy yourself. So that will wrap up issue number 10.5.
Everybody run and get ice, apparently. And Dastardly and Muttley.
All right, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.